My name is Jeremy, and this is Good Beer Matters.
I just had this incredible creative drive to tell that story of like, Afna beer belongs everywhere. Mindful drinking means I just don't order or purchase alcoholic beer anymore because I found one to be impossible. Aficionado is the world's first professional level training and certification program for alcohol-free and non-alcoholic adult beverage.
Craft beer was meant to be better, to create an artisanal experience out of flavor, history, and culture. But sometimes we overindulge and lose sight of what brought us here. My next guest reminds us that, for a great experience, mindful drinking is mandatory, but alcohol is optional. We find great experiences at the intersection of craft and culture. These are the stories of us, of great food and the beer that brings it all together. For the craft and culture of beer, this is episode 144 of Good Beer Matters with certified Cicerone and aficionado founder, Megan Anderson. Well, welcome back to the Good Beer Matters podcast. I've got my good buddy, Megan Anderson, here today, and we're going to talk about so many different things. We are going to cover ground in the alcohol-free beer, but that's just the beginning. It expands exponentially from there. And just the pre-conversation we had before I hit the record button is an excellent indicator that we could go for quite some time on this, right? Megan, thank you very much for coming back to the Good Beer Matters podcast.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thanks so much. I'm excited to be back. It was an honor to hear from you.
Well, I feel like every time you and I have had conversations, they've been really good conversations just because, you know, we can talk about beer and those are great conversations, but whenever you and I talk about beer, it's a slightly skewed version of that beer conversation mm-hmm. that leads to another thing, that leads to another thing that expands to the worlds that you and I both occupy outside of beer, which is always exciting to bring all those things I love into one kind of conversation topic thing. It's a complicated thing, but it's always fun. Let's just get everyone caught up. You've been on the podcast before with Spencer Plessel, and we did a conversation about alcohol-free. And we're going to dive into that topic a little bit deeper today, like I just mentioned. But let's get everyone caught up. You are a certified Cicerone. You've worked in sales. You've worked in education. Recently got your MBA this year. You've been alcohol free for a few years. You started the aficionado certification program, among other things. And you just got married a few days ago, which is, you know, that's what everyone wants to do in their honeymoon is just, you know, get on a phone call with me. Right.
That's right.
What have I left out about those accolades? Cause there's quite a bit.
No, I think that's, I've been busy. You know, I'd say that for me, changing my relationship with alcohol was a personal one and definitely led to some unexpected outcomes, but all of them wouldn't have gotten me here had I not pursued that additional education, which really focused on sustainability. And there's so much application for that inside of beer that it's really unbelievable. And I know some of the things we talked about is like, how are we giving back to the industry? There's some things, exciting things there that I've been working on, but primarily, you know, really my focus in the NBA even was raising awareness around this moderation movement in the United States and kind of trying to vet with my colleagues inside and outside of the industry of like, how big is this thing? You know, how big is this category opportunity, especially for somebody who comes from a beer background, you know, and 86% of the sales of this category right now are coming from alcohol-free and non-alcoholic, which I'll call AFNA for the rest of the program. Perfect. Just to reduce words and use a great trademark term that Dr. Keith Fia so graciously suggested to me. But AFNA beer making up 86% of that category. And for me as a sales professional and a business development executive, which is really how I've made my career off of business development for companies is like, how big is this opportunity and what's the strategic way we can go capture it? And outside of inventing my own NA beer brand, I really preferred to focus on helping others grow their brands in the market using my expertise, and then quickly discovered that we lacked common knowledge and education on this topic, which was pretty interesting and also funny because beer is so well studied. And thank you for that introduction. And I would just say that, yeah, I what I ended up discovering through this educational process and personal transformation and development was there's a lot of room for this category to grow. And I felt best positioned to serve that need in my experience, prior experience with the Boston Beer, leading beer education for North America, and subsequent training opportunities in the hops extract space, hemp derived beverage space, and then non-alcoholic, AFNA beverage space. So yeah, there's a huge opportunity. I've been doing a lot of talking on that topic this year about how do we make zero our biggest asset. So I'm excited to dive into that today and hopefully share some good conversation and insights with one another on that topic.
Well, and I can't wait for this video to come out. I'm not, as of this recording, I'm not sure the status of it, but you recently did a video with Julia Herz, our good buddy, Julia mm-hmm. Herz, and,
yes.
and my co-host from the Sense of Beer Style podcast, and a few other folks to talk about. We can homebrew and we can turn that into low alcohol or no alcohol. But that's something I really want to learn how to do, if nothing else, just to take those strong beers and, cut them down a little bit, mm-hmm. if nothing else. Tell us about that experience first.
Yeah. So that was such a cool collaboration, and that really happened. That was all Julia. Julia, as you know, is the executive director now of the American Homebrew Association, but has a very vast career in education and in growing, with the Brewers Association, and just wildly curious about new things and always trying to connect and help people. And I haven't actually known Julia personally very long, only maybe for about 2 or 3 years, but we just hit it off right away. We really connected at a deeply personal level and just enjoyed spending time together. She was part of my beta test group for aficionados, as were you, Jeremy.
Yeah.
So appreciate your involvement in that and helping me build a collective of professionals in the industry that could validate this information, because it wasn't about me making up a bunch of information or doing research and presenting it as a certification pathway. I really thought it was important to take institutional knowledge from all over the industry and connect that into a certification pathway. So we really started working together, I guess, in late 2021 on that aficionado project. And then she invited me to speak at the American Homebrew Association Homebrew Con in San Diego this year in 2023, actually 2 days before I graduated from my MBA. So I was finishing my last assignments, running to give my talk on brewing NA beer at home, and then flying into Iowa to do my graduation and walk with my class, which was really cool. But Julia particularly saw an opportunity in NA brewing at home, A, because we don't want to play by the same parameters, but more so like if people find out about this, how can we make sure they can do it safely? So let's learn about that together. So the first was just inviting me to give a talk on sort of how to brew homebrew NA beer, and then how to do it or how to evaluate it from a sensory perspective. And so I brewed a homebrew beer for that talk. I was like, oh boy, I've actually never brewed this at home, so maybe I should do that. So I flew to Asheville, North Carolina, had been put in contact with a great guy who's in the podcast we did with Doug Piper and Julia last week. His name is Josh Brewer. That is actually his real name.
His fate was decided long ago.
I mean, like, how could you not go into brewing, right? Just a wonderful human being. And he actually won the Sam Adams homebrew competition. He's an awarded homebrewer, and he's worked at other professional breweries, including Sierra Nevada, Mother Earth. He worked at a couple different brewing startups, and now with his wife Shannon is starting a new brewery called Brewwell, and the focus is actually on yoga, meditation, and making great German style beers, as well as low and no offerings. To
that sounds like such a great day.
Tell me this, like, this is you are gonna have to be like customer number one, because this is like, it's so up your alley. But anyway, I got a hold of him through a friend. He wanted to take on the challenge. He had a really great, really nice SS Brewtech setup, and we decided to go ahead and attempt brewing a homebrew. So we did the research together. We wrote a recipe called MJ, Megan and Josh's NAIPA. We had failures. We had laughter. We had a lot of fun. And actually, that first brew was the one where Mark about the culture of over drinking because he wanted to come see brewing NA, and that generated this Good Beer Hunting article that I was mentioned in. And my understanding is from that conversation, Mark was awarded an international journalism award for that through the Brewing Journalist Institute. I can't remember what. I'm sure you were awarded an award there too. I think.
Are you thinking the North American Guild of Beer Writers?
That is it. He received an award, a best in class award for that article. And my understanding is that article is the number one read article on Good Beer Hunting of this year and a top 10 of all time, which I think speaks to the idea that people are curious about this movement. It generated this awesome homebrew that I ended up taking to HomebrewCon. People tasted it. There were great people there. I'm thinking about Keith Lemke from Siebel was like in line when I walked up, you know, and he's always been a really fun person to bounce ideas off of. And he, you know, is the first to call out when he doesn't think something is authentic to beer. And he came and listened to my talk and gave me some just beautiful compliments on how he thought that this was really great information and valid. And Julia tasted the beer. She's like, yeah, I got to learn how to make this. So we all got back together 2 weeks ago in Asheville. Doug Piper came because Keith Villa had told him about the program. And so he brought us all together along with someone from the homebrew club in Asheville. And so we brewed the beer. We actually missed our gravity that day. So we ended up with a beer. My understanding is as of today, this beer is sitting at about 1.2% ABV. So now we get to write about why that happens. We used two yeast packets this time instead of one and changed our dry hopping regimen. So I imagine we got some hop creep from that and had some additional yeast that actually caused that. But this is what makes it fun is like, you know, we don't have to play by the same rules as of like what makes AFNA beer 0.0 or under 0.5 as a home brewer, but what means quality and what means safety was really the focus. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we found out so many things that we couldn't even answer during that exercise. So I think what we're finding is there's a lot of opportunity to be able to teach this material and become very good at it. And there's actually a few groups out there that are homebrewing a lot of NA beer in Australia. And the interest is growing. Actually, that evening, I was asked to come to the Malt Rangers like home brewing club meeting. And there were 40 people there that came to learn about brewing NA beer at home. And it was just amazing. I mean, I never thought in my life I would see home brewers. I mean, you could see the skeptics in the audience, but they were curious. And we did a sampling of some athletic beers, and I brought a bunch of things for them to taste. I did some sensory spiking on some compounds found commonly in NA beer, particularly methionyl, which gives that warty character.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
And you could see them understanding. I mean, I'm telling them, I'm like, methionyl is a Strecker aldehyde. It is not odor active in ethanol. So then I poured a regular beer into this spiked glass, and it immediately that potato character disappeared.
Interesting.
And they're starting to get it. Oh, this is maybe why I didn't like NA beer before, but now I can learn to work around this challenge knowing that it comes from malt. So it was just a very great day. And I think Julia's entire intention of this is let's put on the table what the challenges are of brewing a great tasting homebrew. How can we do it safely? And let's start to provide some education because this can drive more interest in homebrewing certain people.
And when you look at the whole homebrewing movement that you know, I've been homebrewing since 2007, and it's just, you see that, you know, people want to brew stronger beers than they can get at home, or that was just the net effect of like, oh, you know, everyone's, you can go out and buy a 6% IPA. Well, I want a 7% IPA I want to do it my way, or then you get those people who are like competition junkies and they want to learn how to just nail every style, you know, the Jamil Zainashev's acolytes, you know, they want to be able to hit every style perfectly and just get awards. And so there's this hunger. You can see those people mm-hmm. who are really into homebrewing. It becomes an identity. It becomes a thing. It's like, you know, my mother makes quilts and they're incredible quilts. She sells these quilts and they're incredible pieces of art. But then you have these people who take homebrewing to that same degree. It seems like this is the next frontier of how do you make that amazing beer that you created or that style that you've absolutely nailed? And how do you take that and turn it into a small beer or an NA beer and still have it taste pretty darn close to the normal thing. And that seems to be the next big challenge that is just emerging now with the work that you're doing and with the work that you've done with Julia. It's just, as a home brewer, you know, I've got a tropical American brown in my garage right now. When I don't want to open another beer, I just go and just get half a glass and I'll drink that. Oh, that was good. I go get another half a glass. Oh, that was good. Go get another half glass because it's there. It's in a keg. It's easy. Next, you know, ooh, I've had a little bit more than I wanted to. If we can learn to brew smaller beers when we want to, when we want to create that, then we can kind of put the control back where it needs to be in our hands. And that's a very interesting concept that this alcohol-free movement and this low alcohol movement is really starting to emerge. As we can have our flavor, we can have our experience, but we can have our control too. And that's something that we've kind of lost over the past few decades that I've witnessed. Hey there, it's me, Jeremy again. I forgot to mention that I also have a podcast with my dear friend, the incredible Julia Herz. Together, we've created the Sense of Beer Style podcast. It's the essential training for those who want to lead in food and beverage. We've created prepisodes to cover foundational beer knowledge, as well as Stylecast to walk you through each category of the 2021 BJCP Beer Style Guidelines. If you work with beer as part of your job, then subscribe and listen so you can become an authority. Go to senseofbeerstyle.com to subscribe.
Oh, that's such a good point. You know, I didn't really expect that being such a focus of a conversation in this homebrew meeting, but it was. I mean, when I wasn't doing education, people were making comments, and even Chris Frey, who was the head of their group, you know, talked about this is why he wanted to learn. He was like, I'm retired now, and I was finding that every night became a Friday night. And I was just really, you know, impressed with the level of openness and sharing from a group of experienced homebrewers on this. It kind of tied into Mark's article from Good Beer Hunting, right? Which was like, it's kind of part of the culture. It's sort of some of the known risk. And when your identity is tied to being a really good, great brewer and conquering every style, I mean, I think those are just reasons, even more reasons why, you know, AFNA beer should have a place either on our homebrew schedule or in our refrigerator, because this just allows us to keep doing what we enjoy. And to me, it's all about being able to drink more beer. I think this is a really healthy opportunity for the category. And I also want to mention before I forget that you bring up a good point when you talk about brewing things that taste like the real thing. Because what I'm noticing now is some of the strongest growth coming from brands are like Corona Zero, Guinness, Dos Equis. They're putting their name on them for a reason. They're trying to create flavor analogs, right? And that's another reason why I think we're perfectly primed for this category to explode in craft AFNA beer, because the technology now exists through the forms of oils and extracts that are natural, as well as brewing and de-alkalization technology that's available at a smaller scale, and biological methods of brewing NA beer, all of which combine to allow Samuel Adams, who probably never imagined of brewing an NA beer, to you know, be considering testing NA beer on draft like Athletic. They see the market opportunity, and they're preparing response to it. Sierra Nevada, Deschutes. These are companies that are very open and to say that we have to participate in this category, and they're not doing it by making up a new style of NA, akin to what, you know, Budweiser did when they created O'Doul's. They made a new type of NA beer. They're saying, no, this is a Sam Adams. This is a Sierra Nevada. This is a Corona. This is a Deschutes. This is a Brewdog. They're so proud of it.
They're putting their name on it, not creating a separate name that appears to be different, right? And you turned me on to Heineken Zero, and I've been drinking a bunch of those. The Guinness Zero, you mentioned the Black Butte from Deschutes, their NA beer. I've got some of that Sam Adams Hazy in my cooler right now. The zero alcohol, and all of those beers. Granted, I've spent a lot of time with beer. I've trained. I've passed fancy exams, and I've trained my palate and all that sort of stuff. these are beers that, especially if I'm not really paying attention, if I'm just drinking, I would never even notice. If I were paying very close attention, I might notice that something was slightly different, but I would quickly get over it, if you know what I mean. It's like, whatever. And keep drinking like, hey, man, God, I'm having a great day. I could drink all day long. Man, I feel like I'm 18 again.
This is what I do, Jeremy. This is what I do beginning at 8 a.m. Like, that's the reality of this is zeros don't have to be perceived as lacking. These add tremendous amount of occasions to our beer drinking regimens, including morning meetings. I think it helps just sort of create that environment of social interaction with people. I've just noticed, I just bring them. I don't care. I throw them in my backpack. I bring them to meetings. And I'm like, I took a Heineken Zero on a Southwest flight recently that had a big sticker on there that said, no alcoholic beverages allowed on board. Do not. And I went right up to the attendant. And I was like, well, this is really strange because this beverage actually says on the side here that it's a non-alcoholic beverage. And she goes, well, I guess you're right. Go ahead. And so I took my Heineken Zero on the plane and everyone's like jealous. They're like, I wish we had that here. So I see the demand and the interest growing because to your point, yes, why they're different. I mean, because you don't have ethanol in there, which we know as somebody who's passed a lot of exams like you have, you know, the flavor impact that that's going to have. And also the solubility nature of ethanol and some of the other, attributes that it, like warming, for example, that it contributes. But minus those things, these technologies have allowed us to capture all the other flavors of fermentation and put those back into the brew. And I think that's where, folks like us can learn to enjoy a Heineken Zero, although slightly different from a traditional Heineken, more occasions during the day.
Yeah. And so I've got a kind of a big question I want to ask you, but let's just set the scene real quick. I mean, you are alcohol, sure. You are completely dry, alcohol free. I'm still a drinker. In fact, I've admitted to you in the past that there are still times when I abuse alcohol, especially on a Friday night, and I've got a barley wine, I've got a this, I've got a that, it's a day after Thanksgiving, and I'm not going anywhere, so I might have an extra, and that's my choice. But the reality is my identity is only partially in the beer industry. I'm also a revived older athlete. I'm a coach. I work do some aquatic work and all that stuff as well as, other jobs and everything else. So beer's only part of what I do. So it's no longer serves me to come home and have a couple beers and just a little bit extra and just a little bit extra more. That's not the life that I want. I'm one of those people that, I don't believe in diets. I understand that works for some. Mm-hmm. It's like, you just got married. A lot of people think, well, I'm going to go on a diet so I look amazing on my wedding day and for the photos, right? Great. If that's your thing, right on. That's not my thing. My thing is I want something that I can sustain for the long haul. If that means, I don't eat 10 cookies on a daily basis, then maybe I have one, that's my approach to all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm still going to have a beer, but there are times when I'm going to be an athlete. Tomorrow I'm going to be a coach. The next day I'm going to be a beer guy. The day after that, who knows? It's nice to have options for these occasions. It's nice to have a specific tool for a specific job, right?
Yep.
And so where I'm going with this is we, especially these days in the traditional beer industry, you get people with their, like me, with their fancy certifications, like, oh, it's all about the experience and the glassware and the food pairing. I am one of those people. I'm guilty of that. And because it's amazing. I want, whether you can taste this off flavor or not, great. I want the experience. A great beer, a great plate of food can be an incredible experience. Talk to me about your perspective on how NA and low alcohol options can still facilitate that experience or even a different experience.
Oh, I love that. And I remember you talking about this with John Walker on a previous episode. And and I mean, I love that you kind of own this group of nerds like that. We're just like, yeah, we take this like a little
Oh,
too far. Like,
I'm super
we're all
ridiculous,
about,
side nose.
yeah, we get it. You can make beer a very, for most people, a very, bland yellow fizzy for a long time beverage that a lot of people didn't put a thought into the most scientific sensory oriented discussions, and then on top of it, tell you about some food that, you must have with it to get that experience. So I get it. Like that's cool. And I think I really appreciated John's answer. And he's like, I don't really know if it's going to become fancy or not. I don't think that really matters, but I think it will develop its own culture just naturally by the demand that people have for it. And I think so. Yeah, for me personally, mindful drinking means I just don't order or purchase alcoholic beer anymore, because moderation for me, which you're kind of alluding to, that's the one cookie versus 10. I found one to be impossible. And there is a growing body of evidence that for a certain amount of the population, for on various factors, moderation with alcohol use can be almost impossible because of its addictive characteristics, and that affects each individual differently. So I love that you began this by talking about really what Derek Brown has brought to the AFNO world, which is the principles of mindful drinking, because that's really what this comes down to. And so to me, being a utopian visionary of sorts, and coming out of this transformation related to me applying mindful drinking principles to my own life, which really just it was equivalent to like, I don't drink alcoholic beer anymore. I can sample it for sensory purposes in a plastic cup in a white room, and I go on with my day, but I do not purchase it at lunch or dinner. I drink AFNO beer now. And because of that, I just was inspired and just had this incredible creative drive to tell that story of like, AFNO beer belongs everywhere. And here's all these new occasions you can enjoy it in, because we're not encumbered by the same challenges as alcoholic beer due to the three-tier system, due to the law of like where you can take alcoholic beverages. So why not begin to suggest that NA beer, for me as an athlete, also, I like Orange Theory. I don't know if you've ever been to an Orange Theory Fitness, but that's like my jam. I'm going to run a sub 7 minute mile by my 42nd birthday, which is something I couldn't have done in my previous lifestyle. But now, not only can I do that, I can drink an AFNO beer as a recovery drink. Because in 2014 in Munich, there's a pu paper published on this. NPR wrote an article about it as well. It keeps surfacing on the internet, but they actually gave non-alcoholic beer as a recovery drink to Olympic athletes in the 2014 Olympics, and noted the increases in performance. Because nutritionally speaking, I think there's a lot of research to be done still to make that claim that AFNO beer is healthy for us. And so not only do I see that, but connecting it to those occasions. So that's an amazing opportunity then to just say breakfast time is a great occasion for me to drink a Guinness 0.0 with my, eggs and kale. And why wouldn't we look at that as nutritionally valuable, but also a way to socially connect? Recently, I'll just give another example. Recently, I gave a not an AFNA dinner pairings, drinks and dinner pairings for a fundraiser in New York City at the Edison Hotel. The entire Sesame Street, or a great deal of the Sesame Street actors were there, because this particular fundraiser was for an organization that serves children that have medical needs in New York State. So it's called Docs for Tots. So it's pediatricians and social workers that basically help families in need because they don't have access to good healthcare. And these are people not only in their own careers, but with the communities they serve, they see the impact of alcohol if it's misused, and those mindful drinking principles are not being applied. So the purpose of me being there was to open their eyes to the idea that there's a $55 bottle of beautiful AFNA Pinot Noir that you can pair with your steak. And there's this wonderful 0.0 pills called Atmosphere, made in Brooklyn by a, imported by a, and designed in Brooklyn, produced. Or your life is very stressful because there's a COVID outbreak. So I just saw the audience beginning to like, they were with me. they were just tasting these things. They're like, this tastes good. I never would have tried this. I never would have considered it or bought it, because to me, coming to a dinner means you drink alcohol.
Yeah.
So by doing this, it was a way to demonstrate that we can begin to think differently about those principles and creating occasions that are just, in some ways, just as good, if not better, because you have the ability to consume more. You're not restricting yourself in that regard.
Well, and this is a great conversation we're having because, well, a little bit of background, and you know this, but anyone watching or listening, I'm an amateur student of human performance. I mean, as a former athlete in college, nothing professional, was never that good. But as someone who kind of pursues athleticism and human performance in other areas, this is one of those things that I'm interested in. Especially, you talked about the Olympic athletes in 2014, and you know, we could talk about the B12 vitamins. We could talk about all the components in there that add to your body. But we're also talking about your mind, right? You can't play sports or dance or music or anything that you do. You can't do it well when your mind is disengaged. That's like, you know, we're eating healthy, but it's just a kale with olive oil and a dozen hard-boiled eggs. I mean, how fun is that? It's not. So what we need to consider is, while we're fueling the body, we also have to fuel our mind. We also have to fuel our spirit. Yeah. To get to that performance state. And anyone who is listening or watching, anyone who's ever been a higher level athlete or musician or whatever this, anyone who's ever experienced that flow state, you know exactly what I'm talking about, to get into that peak performance state. And what I wonder, especially with those athletes, and you talk about this pairing dinner. You know, I know people who don't drink alcohol for religious reasons, for athletic reasons, for family history reasons, for economic reasons. There's dozens of reasons why people would not drink, but you can still put together that experience. You can still put together the flavors of things that pair well together, things that enliven your soul, things that facilitate conversation and communion with other people, whether they're like-minded or not, whether they look like you or not, but just to facilitate that conversation and to get into that performance and that relational peak performance state. Alcohol is not necessary. It is not required. It is a helpful tool in some of those situations, but it's not necessary. We can do it in other ways. And you just talked about that beautifully. I think this is an important concept that we need to get out into the world, is you can satiate your sweet tooth. You don't need a 10th cookie. You can satiate, you can satiate your need to disconnect. You don't need a 12% barley wine. You know, there are tools out there. There are options, and you have control over your experience. So it's a power to the people type of situation.
You know, I love that. And when we wrote a book, when I created Aficionado, we knew right away we needed to write a book on Afna beer. There'd never been one written before. So we wrote a 150 page manual, really learning manual on everything from the history of small beer and, you know, non-alcoholic beer post-prohibition, that also covered topics like, how does alcohol affect your brain and the body, like alcohol and your health? And then we wrote about the principles of mindful drinking. So we really, because to your point, like, we wanted to, this, the entire purpose when I thought of, like, why am I doing this? Why am I going to risk starting a business in a post-COVID world in an unknown category that hasn't really, that by many company standards in the US isn't really worth the focus yet. But I'm banking on where I've already seen it work, and it's in cultures that embrace blending of these two concepts, which really comes back down to, like, beer is such a, you know, look at Germany and Spain, like, where it's over 12% of the market because they're beer cultures, right? So they're saying to us, by non-alcoholic beer there being over 10% of the market, is we're drinking our beer and still enjoying it, but we're having the one cookie. Yeah. And then we're switching to, but you don't have to even give up any of those pleasures. I mean, to me, it's like still getting to eat 10 cookies, but only having the impact to your health of one. And if anything, you're getting some vitamins in those cookies too, and some other benefits. And it still acts as that social lubricant because, you know, quite frankly, people nowadays have the option with cannabis, the legalization of cannabis, to choose an alcohol replacement if they so desire, even in the form of beverage. It's one of the fastest growing categories right now is hemp derived beverage. You could look at a market like Minnesota where it can be sold in a craft tap room, a THC drink right next to alcohol, which is kind of unbelievable that that is happening right now in the US. And the reality is we have the technology to allow people to choose how they want to experience themselves relaxing or being social. And beverage itself is the tool, right? Nobody in the cannabis world, nobody goes to each other's house to split a gummy is what I heard somebody say one time, right? You go and you drink with your friends and you bring the bottle to share and you sit and have a session with your friends while you talk out the challenges of your life in this world. And I think that's where these AFNA products play a very important role in those occasions.
You bring up another part of the experience that, so a previous guest, Dr. Ted Slingerland, came on, and I'll have all this in the show notes, but he came on and he wrote a book on our culture, civilization, and our inherent human need to get drunk. And not just our human need, I had no part of it. People smarter, much smarter than I have also observed a few animals seeking out that rotting fruit that had extra caloric value, if you know what I mean. One of the things that he talked about within our, well-studied need to get high, get altered, get drunk, get ourselves to either check out or to get us to a very creative state. We know a lot of famous musicians and actors who kind of get themselves to that perfect little state. It's like, I forget which musician it was, but they said, there's something to the effect of, I'm not ready to go on stage until I've had one shot. And then I'm just like perfect. And then I'm in that perfect state of just funny. And I forget who said that, but that's a common thing is I want to get myself to that space, whatever that space is, whatever the motivation is. And that's part of this experience. That's part of relating to each other. That's part of that social lubricant of I can shed my day. I can shed my fears. I can shed my anxieties with a good double IPA. And next thing you know, I'm talking to everyone at the bar and we're best friends forever for at least the next 2 hours. But when we're talking no alcohol, how does that change that dynamic? And you mentioned it still serves that tool. And I know my own answer to this, but it serves that purpose, but it's a different mechanism. It's a different thing. Can you unpack that as far as you understand it?
Yeah. I'd say I look at other substances in our society, like coffee, for example, some people have sensitivities to, we don't think twice about saying, do you want regular or decaf? Right. Like you're still getting to have a warm cup of coffee and relax and experience the benefits of that, whatever it may be to you. For a lot of people, it's just the feeling of what I do when I wake up to get my day started. Mm-hmm. But as we evolve in our life and maybe our physiology evolves and our consciousness evolves, we understand that some of these things at all or in excess can be, have negative impact to our performance, to our health, to maybe standing in the way of helping us achieve that one really big thing. So that it can help us get that creative flow started. Certainly, I think there's examples of how in society we've created alternatives for people to either maybe choose to blend, like if you're going to have a lot of something, or choose to abstain for something from one reason for another, but still seek and desire that substitute because it goes back to there's been many books written, really great books actually just written on the impact of beverage on human society. Mm. I think there's a great book that I read when I was teaching at Boston Beer called Seven Drinks That Saved the World. And it goes through coffee and tea and wine and beer and each of those historical contexts. I mean, I think it's also safe to say historically, maybe there are examples of other mammals seeking out, fruit that had been fermented. But we can't really say why. Is it the caloric component? Realistically speaking, historically, and you know this from your training, is that we had to drink alcohol to survive. And as a matter of fact, humans sort of evolved and adapted as a result of that, because as we began to live in these more agrarian and urban sort of living situations, especially into medieval times, the water supplies were not reliable for human consumption. So really, it required a certain amount of ethanol to be present in our diets to prevent us from getting sick and dying. And there's many examples of cholera outbreaks that we can look at in the UK, historically documented, to talk about the impact of that. I mean, you can even go back into like biblical references of like, drink the wine, not the water, but don't get drunk, yep. Right? Like there's this advice being given to us for over two millennia and across many different, you know, belief systems, scriptures, health models, to say like, there was a need for this. And I think, you know, that need also became, you know, people got together to drink because you had to go to the source where it was being created or made. And it was also a currency. And so for all those reasons, we fast forward into modern times, which, to your point, it's no longer a necessary ingredient, but we are belief systems of what it does for us. You know, those are hard challenges to overcome when it's such a subjective experience. If a person truly believes that a couple beers makes them more creative, and actually I'll say, you should add this to the show notes, Dr. Andrew Huberman in the Stanford Labs did a really great, two great segments I would recommend to your listeners. I think they'd be interested in. One's called Alcohol, Your Body and Your Brain, which I think is a really, really good episode. I believe it was one of the most downloaded podcasts of all time last year. And he did another one on...
What is the podcast?
It's Dr. Andrew Huberman, the Huberman Lab. And Huberman it's called Lab, Alcohol... Okay. Yep, it's called Your Alcohol, Your Body and Your Brain, I believe. And it's like a 3-hour long form episode that's all about the biology of how alcohol impacts us, history. And I don't think the listeners will be super happy to hear what his recommended amount of alcohol intake for ideal health is, but that's not for me to, that's not what aficionado is about. You know, for us, yeah. We're really about to educate on the opportunity, but the medical evidence is a little hard to ignore, but he also talks about the same belief system with things like substances like cannabis. Like, people truly believe that doing this makes them more creative. And the reality is, there definitely appears to be a more spiritual element to that creativity. And just, it's hard once humans believe something, that bias exists, right? So like, oh, every time I do this, I feel more creative. Well, of course you do, because you're changing your consciousness, which means the focus that you have on certain aspects in your worldviews changes, mm-hmm. which allows for that neuroplasticity and those neural pathways, which is a whole nother topic of discussion, to be activated. And then you may feel more creative as a result of that, especially when you're being social, because it makes you feel happy, because we're happy when we're around people. Yeah.
Well, and there's something to be said for that too. Again, from a human performance standpoint, you know, I wake up and I drink espresso every morning, and that's how I begin my day. But on those occasions when I'm traveling, I'm staying some hotel that's got crappy coffee. Well, I don't know if you know this, Megan, but I'm a raging snob when it comes to beverages. and so if all I've got is crappy hotel coffee, then you know what? I'm going to go without, because I just can't. I can't. It tastes so awful that it makes me grumpy. It puts me in a bad mood. It ruins mm-hmm. my day because it tastes awful. But you know what? Those days when I go without my morning coffee, wouldn't you know it? My day still starts. I still get moving. Everything starts working eventually. So I know from experience that I prefer to have my little espresso in the morning. It helps me prime the pump, is what I tell myself. But when I don't have that, it all works. It's all just fine. Mm-hmm. We can go out and by extension, this would go to, hey, we're going to go out. We're going to be the life of the party. You could still do that without alcohol. Alcohol mm-hmm. does not create something that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Alcohol just opens the door a little bit wider, so that which already exists can sneak through a little bit quicker. Same thing mm-hmm. with coffee. We talk about, again, human performance. And part of that is the ritual. It's not mm-hmm. the drink. It's not the caffeine. It's not the alcohol. It's the ritual. And you talk mm-hmm. to any athlete, any performing artist, anyone who has to get themselves into a peak performance state. Talk to Taylor Swift. She knows, you know, it's before this event, if you do these same things in sequence to activate your brain, then you're going to get to that performance state. And please forgive me for being crude, mm-hmm. but I mean, that's kind of what foreplay is for as well, to get you to that peak performance state mm-hmm. with your loved one. Mm-hmm. It's all kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. Espresso, beer, whatever it may be, just kind of helps, but it doesn't hinder when it's not there. Would you agree?
I think you're nailing it. I mean, I'd go on to say Dr. Huberman does a lot of podcasts on human creativity and how to stimulate it, because for that exact reason, he's very interested in the things that we ingest and put in our body and how that affects us. And I've learned a lot from his podcast because he actually says exactly that. And there's some really even good in the realm of becoming, you know, exploring or being sober curious or Cali sober, like looking at that movement. You know, Annie Grace wrote a book called This Naked Mind, which is one of the first books I read when I was still drinking, but I was very curious about sobriety and mm-hmm. thinking, wondering if I could do it and be successful at living that way. And she really just went right after those rituals. Like, here's what you believe these rituals do for you. Here's the reality why you may feel that way, which is why when you become sober, you should still go do all of these things and enjoy your life, because it's actually these other impacts of being with people and having meaningful conversation and generative discussion. But we do it with a drink in hand because, to your point, we take pleasure in that. That's part of our ritual, and we should seek to do that. And now we have the tools available to us. And I think what we're just experiencing is just a latent acceptance that, like, oh, alcohol was just always a part of my ritual, but what you're saying is it's actually not good for me. So I should be more mindful about how I adopt that into these situations. And how is it? I think everybody who's at least I've talked to who's curious about sobriety, that's one of their first questions is like, how do you do it? How do you go out? How do you travel? And, mm-hmm. and how do you? Well, you know, at first it was what I think I noticed was like how many missed opportunities there were for that occasion, for a non-alcoholic beverage that wasn't water, an energy drink, soda, you know, or coffee to be consumed in that place when there's these other non-alcoholic analogs that still have a premium price tag attached to them. That kind of was very evident to me. So yeah, I would totally agree with you. When you think about performance, consciousness, I think a lot of it ties back to the rituals in terms of like how our worldview develops. And we just happen to live in a culture and society that puts a lot of emphasis on alcohol being the vehicle to enjoy those rituals. And that's just more and more evidence. And I like science, so I like to read the studies, seeing how that is actually, when applied in cohorts, you know, impacting people's overall health and well-being. And I'll give an example. There's a study in Japan that was just cited. I really like this Victoria Waters and Dry Atlas. She's doing a newsletter on AFNA and like what's happening in the industry. And she posted this study about in Japan, they gave a cohort of people suffering from alcoholism and alcohol use disorder. They just gave them analog replacements of those beverages in an AFNA, AF and NA format. Mm-hmm. And it reduced by a significant percentage, helped people just transform their relationship with alcohol. And then they went on without a relapse of overconsumption to the point of needing to be hospitalized or having these other issues associated with it, which told me that we get stuck in these loops and habits and rituals, which without exploring what it's like to go a morning without an espresso and see that you're actually going to be okay. And that you actually might find that day you tried a smoothie or another juice, or you actually, because you just enjoy beverage so much and it's such a part of your ritual, you can look for another opportunity to substitute, in this case, another beverage. And if you look at the AFNA category and the description of the consumer, which is something I'm also very interested in, is how do we market these beverages? How do we create this market to grow this into a $25 billion plus category in North America? And I think that part of that is knowing that the majority of these consumers are the people that are exactly like you. I'm actually only like 22% of the group, right? People that abstain. The rest of people are still drinking alcohol. They're just trying to say, I don't drink alcohol Monday through Friday. Or mm-hmm. when I sit down and drink with my friends, I have my one Imperial IPA and then I switch to the NAs. And I'm hearing that adoption of that ritual happen now, and people aren't losing their happiness or they wouldn't be doing it and the category wouldn't be growing. So I think we're starting to see evidence that not only in the cases where alcohol may be having a negative impact, but just in regular everyday use, there's still a lot of pleasure to be had. And I think that's a really good way of looking at it.
And there's kind of an old adage, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, where they say, well, okay, if we're going to go out and we know we're going to be drinking, then make sure the first thing you drink is really, really good, because then you won't care, right? You know, that type of thing. And that's not to say that, you know, make a judgment on quality from one thing to the other, but what a fantastic move that is for those people like me who still drink, but you know, I'm a father now. Story I tell myself is I'm still an athlete. I'm a coach and I do these things. So, okay, how about I go and I have one good beer. And then after that, I have some NA beers that are also good that I also enjoy and they help create this great experience. But I can drive home. In fact, I'll give all y'all a ride, you know, because yes. I really don't want to leave after all you guys are on the road. So how about you all just pile my car? I'll drop you off and then I'll see you in the morning and I'll come bang on your door extra loud just because it's funny. it's stuff like I'm sorry, I forget where I was going to go with that. It was going to be extremely profound and witty, but I lost it. But it's one of those things where it does serve a purpose, whether you are completely alcohol free or completely pro alcohol, that I am and always have been, and probably, if I'm honest, always will be. But just understanding that we have control. But You brought up AFNA, officially called Aficionado, and I want to make sure while we still have some time that we cover that ground as well. So tell us about Aficionado, aka AFNA.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so Aficionado is the world's first professional level training and certification program for alcohol-free and non-alcoholic adult beverage, which for us, those verticals encompass AFNA beer, which is our first vertical that's available now. So if you're listening to Good Beer Matters, you probably like beer and you should go to alcoholfreeaficionados.com and check out our training vertical. So we actually have a training course in there that you can go through, which has slides and videos of me explaining basically all the information that we compiled. There's a syllabus you can access that helps you study for an AFNA beer certified distinction, which Jeremy, you hold. Yep. So you know about this. So it's an online test you can take that's perfect for any maker, distributor, retailer, or media person, or just an individual enthusiast around these beverages to up their knowledge game around everything from the history of AFNA beer to production method, sensory, how to read the label, regulatory, to the how does it affect your health, and how do you appropriately sell and serve. So we don't necessarily do anything that the other training programs do. We really attack this from a totally different angle and focused on what makes AFNA alcohol-free and non-alcoholic beer, in this case, different from its alcoholic counterparts. And that was differentiated enough to create this platform, so much so that we are going to create additional verticals. And I'm starting to write the AFNA wine certified program right now with some non-alcoholic winemakers actually in the US, as well as a program called Canna Connoisseur, which will be for hemp derived and marijuana derived beverage. And then finally, an AFNA spirits vertical will follow to talk about alcohol-free and non-alcoholic spirits. So the point was, looking at this being a you know, what I have deemed to be in its totality in a 7-year maturity curve, about a $35 billion total AFNA category, again, encompassing AF and NA beer, hemp derived beverage, AF and NA wine, AF and NA spirits and RTDs. You know, in the next 7 years, we're at 1% of the category now, or $1 billion. So we have a long ways to go. So those cohorts that I mentioned in this ecosystem of service need to level up their knowledge so that they can better spot opportunity. And there's already hundreds of SKUs available because the demand online is there. Now they have to make their way into the marketplace and find adoption at traditional retail, especially in the on-premise, which we're really seeing suffering right now, particularly on draft, and craft beer numbers are down because consumption patterns have changed. So the AFNA Beer Certified platform really serves to meet that need. We just recently were featured in a Brewbound article. We have signed an engagement with BrewDog, who takes this category very seriously. They've had over 500% growth in their AF variety pack. And we're one of the first craft non-alcoholic offerings that were available. It's kind of funny how they made it. It was like a joke. It was like James Watt's joke of like making the strongest beer in the world, and everyone got kind of pissed off about that. So then he went and made a beer called Nanny State, which had 0.5%, and people went nuts over it, and it actually sold a lot of it, and there was demand. So he's like, oh geez, I guess we have to make this now. Yep. Well, in the US, they open source their recipe. They make it in a very sustainable way. I was aware of this when I was selling hops. So I met them, met their brewers, started making some NA beers with them, signed a deal with them. So they're actually taking this AFNA beer certified program all across the US to their distributors and their retailers, including Mary Guyver's team at Whole Foods and Shannon's team at Total Wine, who are very focused right now in this category and looking for opportunities to level up their knowledge base for their team so that they can better serve that consumer, which is really the purpose of creating this program, was to empower people. So Aficionado in a nutshell is just the first of its kind that doesn't compete with Cicerone. It doesn't compete with WSET. It doesn't compete with the SOM program.
It complements.
It's meant to,
it complements.
It complements. Yes. And to refer people back to those programs if they need more specific style training, for example. But what we really want to do is close the gap of knowledge between that that AFNA offering and those alcoholic counterparts.
And this is interesting because we've spent a lot of time talking about the experience, you know, leaning into, because for me, that's where the rubber meets the road, right? This is why we have a $100 billion beer industry, is because of the experience, because of all that. There's a couple things I want to pull out of this, what you just said though, and please correct me if I've got this wrong, but for all of you who are like, okay, yeah, experience, you're just a fancy Cicerone. All you care about is food pairing and fancy glassware sticking out your pinky. Guilty of all of that. But if you're business oriented, if you're someone who thinks about, well, I need to move these widgets from point A to point B so everyone gets paid, that's perfectly wonderful as well. We all love to get paid. This is the number I looked up is in 2020. It was a $17.5 billion industry, just the NA stuff. Your numbers are almost double that currently. This is a $1 billion industry, billion with a B industry. And so if we want to do a better job to turn that into a $100 billion industry or be a part of this $30 billion industry, we should know about it. We should know our product. Call me old fashioned, but if I'm going to sell something, I should know my product. And just for a little frame of reference, everyone is losing their minds over Taylor Swift. I think she's wonderful, but this is way bigger than Taylor Swift. I brought her up earlier. I got to bring her up again. This is way bigger than Taylor Swift. This NA stuff, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So when we go out to educate people on stuff, there's a few different myths that people still have in their mind. And I'm just going to call a duck a duck. But it used to be once upon a time that non-alcoholic beers were for the people with a problem with alcohol. That mm-hmm. is no longer true. We just talked about that. And if you don't remember what we talked about, rewind this and start over. The other myth we have is, well, non-alcoholic beer doesn't have alcohol as a preservative, so therefore it's dangerous. We can get sick off of stuff. Well, that is true, but people have learned how to manage that. And if you doubt what I'm saying right now, if you doubt Megan nodding her head in agreement, then go to your grocery store and look at all the canned chili, the canned soup, the processed foods, and tell me we haven't figured out that problem. Right? Is all this fair?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I think there's just some that we're just a little bit behind. We were when mass domestic beer was the primary means of drinking beer in the United States in the 80s and 90s, and there was only 1,700 breweries in the US. And then we quickly caught on to the fact that there were better options, that it could be made safely, that it could be made with high quality, with a diverse range of offerings. And there were laws that needed to be changed in order to make that happen. And I see the same opportunity here, Jeremy. And to your point, I think as a person who abstains from alcohol, my own experiences led me to see that that there wasn't a readiness level in the market to help me as a consumer. I would go to places and experience that stigma a lot. Like, hey, do you guys have any beer? I'm in this amazing beer bar with like 80 beers on draft and there's nothing for me. And I could only get a water, or like an Arnold Palmer, which, you know, whatever. And like, you know, I was always felt like you're missing an opportunity to be, you know, to serve that need. And then as it relates to food safety, I think that that was another, that Dr. Keith Villa really pushed me to create Aficionado based on that. He was like, there needs to be more knowledge, almost on the cautionary side, like as craft brewers inevitably recognize they have to have these things, how do we teach them to make it safely? Because to your exact point, we're now dealing with a beverage that's being made in a facility that makes alcoholic beverages with yeast and fermentation precursors and everything. To make something that doesn't have the the microbial protections that ethanol provides. So how do you do that? Which is why we focused a lot on that. A lot of the articles I've been asked to write, we're writing an article for Zymergy right now on how to homebrew it safely, right? Yeah. That's the questions that people have, which it's just education and application of that knowledge, because exactly what you said, this is just a food safety issue or a stigma associated issue with things that we believed to be true before really the consumer demanded to have more options and the market was forced to serve it.
And you landed the plane much better than I did, because really what this is for people who make money in the beer industry, who are bean counters in the beer industry, this non-alcoholic thing is just pure opportunity. It's pure opportunity. Yes. And what you've created with Aficionado, and you didn't pay me to say this, but it allows people who are trying to take advantage of this opportunity to understand their product, understand the objections, like, oh, I'm not alcoholic. That's not safe. You have to understand this stuff, and then you can sell it, and then you can create this experience we talked about, and then everyone can drive home and do it again tomorrow, and maybe even for breakfast. There's no alcohol. Take it on a plane. That's right. I don't care. You know, to kind of bring this to a close, I've got a few different questions, and you can answer them as you see fit. But because you answered my normal questions last time around, I've got some different questions for you. But the word on the street is you have a lot of the younger generations entering the drinking culture, and they're not doing it the same way I did when I was young a billion years ago, when it was all on and all off. I still have visions of people doing keg stands, because that was cool way back then, right? Don't get me started. But you have these younger generations now that are, I don't know if it's trepidation or curiosity, I'm not quite sure what it is, but they're not drinking as much alcohol as my generation did. What do you have to say to them as guidance as they enter alcohol-free? What do you have to say to them?
Yeah, well, I think the data is pretty clear that they are still drinking, but they're drinking less, and they drink premium because they grew up differently than we did. So I'd say to them, like, tell us old geezers, like, to get over it already. Like, that we live in a time of there's technology available from ChatGPT and OpenAI, and our ability to communicate and innovate. I think we're only at the tip of that iceberg of what you and I will see, Jeremy, in the remainder of our life on Earth. Is that there's the conventions that we used to hold in a post-COVID world are everything we thought we knew is probably wrong. And to begin to assume that we know that young people are going to want to do the same things we did is wrong, because there's just so much more information available to them to make those choices. And we just didn't have that. What was your other choice than to do the keg stand? I mean, it was not like we were being educated on this, and there wasn't even a no duels really option for us at that time.
Because beer wasn't for tasting. It was for consuming en masse.
Exactly. And that gets into why we hold these current beliefs that we still do. Yep. So I'm very encouraged by this younger generation. You know, I'm like the Kristen Bell of the world. I allowed my children under supervision to sip non-alcoholic beer taste it and know what mom does. And because I want to reduce the stigma. I mean, how amazing would it have been for me to go to the pub with my dad at 18 and see that it wasn't about just getting drunk, but I could sit with my dad and have a beer. It was just a beer with under a 0.5% alcohol, which other frankly beverages would have been less than if I would have had a glass of orange juice and or make eaten out of a loaf of bread on my counter, all of which have over a great drink ABV and no matter what the ABV, a non-alcoholic is. Beer. So I think just something as simple as that knowledge allows people to make different choices. And I think as it relates to that need to alter ourselves, there are and will continue to be different options for people outside of these conventional options at a rate that we probably can't even, you know, can't even really understand now. But for now, it's kind of alcohol and cannabis as an emerging replacement. And AFNA just sort of sitting in the background for the taking, like, okay, now that everybody is going to understand what these substances can do to you, how can we integrate these other beverages to keep the ritual whole and make great drinks and connect and over a great drink, no matter what the ABV is or beverage in your glass. And that's really, like, to me, what the exciting thing is, that I would imagine that we'll see more openings in CPG firms to launch and run new and emerging brands that serve this need than ever before, and less of the traditional, which, again, as a utopian visionary, is an exciting thing to contemplate, and certainly keeps me feeling like I want to stay in the industry and keep flying this flag, because for me, moderation and mindful drinking and adopting an alcohol-free lifestyle is my comeback story. It's part of my transformation. It was such a unique and gratifying experience to beat and win something, that a problem that had been holding me back from unfolding my potential. And I think the younger generation just may be a little bit more wise to those types of concepts than perhaps we were when we were doing keg stands in college.
Well, and they have people like you to teach them that. And if I remember from the conversation last time, when you stopped drinking alcohol, not only did you get your life back, but you got a incredibly much sweeter life out of it. And judging by the incredible year you've had, that apparently that just keeps going. And so it just really speaks to mindful drinking, whether you're mindfully tasting this wonderful Belgian Golden Strong or being mindful about your choices in drinking one of my favorites, the Cerveza Atletica from Athletic Brewing. Mm. It's just, again, they didn't pay me to say that. It's just, you can choose your life. You can choose your life. Choose well. Yeah. Right?
That's right. That's right. Choose well and sip with enjoyment, yes. Right? No matter what's in the glass. Yeah. I love that, Jeremy. And I've just so enjoyed your curiosity and desire to spread the word about the moderation movement. I hope all of your drinkers get a chance to try some great things in Dry January, even if you're just curious about it. I think every year you're going to continue to find new offerings that just delight the palate, you know, and at minimum that we're, you know, you and I are all about that. And at best, to improve somebody's life and give them the opportunity to maximize their potential, if that indeed is how this will come to fruition for them, is like why.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Some quick questions. I've asked you this before. I want to see if it's changed. Megan, why does good beer matter to you, or good non-alcoholic beer matter to you?
Yeah. Good beer matters to me because it empowers how we connect over the drink. And beer has been my pathway and the journey I have walked to cultivate those experiences for myself, but for many others, because I've had a position of influence to do that. I've been blessed to run major education programs for very large breweries. And what I learned was, at the end of the day, like, you know, you became this this kind of interesting person by being involved with the beer industry. You could all be sitting next to a neurosurgeon. They'd want to know more about your job than their own, you know?
Yep.
I think for me that's why I think there's something very, very curious to people about cultivating these experiences and sharing. And a good beer matters because that's sort of, that it is in our DNA. It is in our history to have these beverages at the table as we enjoy our life on this earth and share those times together. And without getting too deep into the spiritual philosophy and nature of those questions, it invokes something in our heart. And I think when our heart and mind can be connected, especially through beer, which I think is a really, really nutritional and beautiful beverage, but also through Afna wine, Afna spirits, beverages of that nature, we can live better and we can make new connections in a way that we haven't experienced before.
Well said. What's the website one more time for anyone who wants to find it and learn more?
Yes, alcoholfreeaficionados.com. And we're also on LinkedIn. So check out our LinkedIn page. We're pretty active on there. It's just LinkedIn/aficionados. You can get to our page from there. And I really would encourage people to check that out, join into the conversation, and don't hesitate to reach out to me personally with anybody that might have questions about the program or is just super curious or has questions about any beer. I like you really like to talk about it. So I'm happy to do that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on yet again, taking your time. As anyone can see, or if you're not watching, you probably heard that you're actually talking to me from your car because you're such a busy mom, entrepreneur, wife. It's just like you're talking from your car because you're on the go. Thank you for spending the time with me, with us. Obviously, I think this is also a very important subject, so I'm glad that you shared it with everyone, and I hope to get it out there. For all the reasons that we just spent the last hour talking about, there's so many reasons why we need to understand this. And so I just appreciate it. Thank you for coming on again.
Yeah, same. Thanks, Jeremy. Best of luck to you. And I look forward to talking to you about all the new future opportunities you will inevitably uncover. So thank you for this show and inviting me back. And thank you to all the listeners out there that are interested in this stuff. It's wonderful to share it with you. So cheers and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Cheers. In this final episode, I want to thank all the guests who came on the show to share their stories and their experiences. And I want to thank all of you who have listened. At this point, I'm pressing pause on the Good Beer Matters podcast because I've said what I was compelled to say. Now I want to take Good Beer Matters in other directions. It's not goodbye forever, just goodbye for now. So consider this the end of the beginning, not the beginning of the end. There are more stories to tell and great beers to be experienced, but for now, the rest of this journey is yours. I would love to hear what stories resonated with you the most and what you're doing to make beer culture even better. Don't forget to grab a beer, hang out with your friends, and let your world open up. Thank you for listening all these years. Cheers.